to try and understand how desperate the situation is in South Africa, we've invited activists in this place. Katie Mudrao is country manager for A21, and she's joined also by Nosipho Vidima, who's a human rights and lobby officer at the Sex Workers Education and Advocacy Task Force. We better know them as SWET. Katie, let me start with you. How bad is the situation in South Africa? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I think this situation is far worse than what we see in statistics or research at the moment. The statistics say that there's about 250,000 slaves in South Africa, which is an alarmingly high amount. It's 0.45% of our population. That's an estimation through research. But the more work that we do in the field and the more awareness that we do, we're actually realizing it's far more of an issue, not just in sex slavery, but in labor slavery, labor trafficking, domestic servitude as well. So I think it's a chicken and egg situation. The more we do awareness, the more we find out about it. I think the issue with human trafficking and sexual exploitation is a lot of people don't self-identify. You know, Griselda and people like herself could have thought it was her fault because she chose to go with someone like that. And so a lot of people in that situation think, I wasn't tricked, I chose this. And so they don't self-identify as victims, which is obviously not the truth. They are victims and they have been exploited.
Probably an impossible question, but what are the indicators that, one, I'm a sex slave, I'm in servitude, I'm being trafficked in some way or the other? What are those check boxes that we need to tick before I suppose we come to the sad realization that we're actually victims of this?
Definitely. I think it comes down to how were you recruited? So what were you told? And has that eventuated? It's like any contract. Are the terms and conditions what you thought they were going to be? And then secondly, do you have freedom of movement? Can you leave and exit anytime that you want without threat or fear for yourself or your family? And then a third indicator could be, are you making the money yourself, or is somebody making money off of you? And that's obviously three quite crude or very simple things to look at. But I would say to anybody, how were you recruited in any kind of employment? You know, are the terms and conditions the same? And can you go? Do you feel safe to go? Because if you don't, I'd start asking questions. Are you really free? Are you really doing this out of your own free will?
Nosipho, at SWET, I imagine you come across many such cases where like Griselda, people were forced into the industry, shall we say?
I would say that at the Sex Workers Education Advocacy Task Force, first of all, we reach about 30,000 sex workers in a year. That is during our outreaches where we actually go out and meet sex workers. We supply condoms. We do small interviews. It's a peer-led intervention where a former sex worker or current sex worker is actually the person talking to the sex worker. And yes, we do come across cases like that. And we've worked very closely with A21. We work with the Hawks. We are totally against anybody that is being exploited in the sex industry. We are against human trafficking. A simple example of the case where we actually have successfully referred would be the case of the doctor and his wife, the big syndicate in Durban. So that came to us through this relationship we've built with sex workers in the area. They alerted us, and thank God that the ladies were actually able to be extracted and removed from that kind of situation. At the end of the day, we do believe that there should be an enabling environment that allows other sex workers, when they see this, we're talking about the independent sex workers, because they're the ones who always notice that this one is not really like myself. This sex worker here or this woman here, her money is taken away. I go home and sleep with my kids. This one is going home and somebody's taking the money, and they alert us. So that's all we want, an enabling environment where independent sex workers can notify, the Hawks can notify, the police can walk straight to the police, because at this moment in time, what we're finding is that when sex workers reach out to the outreach van, it's at night. There are not enough units that can come straight to meet with us and actually extract the ladies, which means that we lose the ladies into the system of human trafficking. So what we really want is an environment where we can reach out to a unit, we can actually say the government has given us enough resources for that outreach team to take that sex worker and actually remove them straight away.
But obviously government is not, unfortunately, able to provide you with the necessary resources to be able to do this and take out every single woman or girl child from the situation.
So that's the problem we're sitting with. And we do not have enough funding to constantly be able to book this person into a hotel and have somebody counsel her right there and then. But where we actually do find situations like that and we are able and there is funding, we actually provide those services and we make sure that we contact to A21. They've been very helpful. They respond within less than a day, within less than a couple of hours, and they come through. There's an intervention. The lady is reunited with the family if she's still willing to go to her family. But also what we need to realize is that because the sex work industry is criminalized, most of the time when there are raids that happen and there is no sex worker peer educator or there is no person that is close to the sex workers in this place, whether it's a brothel, whether it's what, most sex workers tend to say, you know what, I was trafficked, because they're going to be, it's actually easier for them to be forgiven and not be arrested. So it does create a kind of a small barrier in sex workers being able to say, these are the people that are trafficked, these ones are independent. So everybody becomes one bunch of people and it conflates, which is what we must be wary about.
A21 exists not only in South Africa, in fact, in a number of countries around the world. It's not soothing, it's not pleasing, but this is not a situation that is unique to South Africa.
Not at all. In fact, I would say I doubt any country is exempt from human trafficking. We work in a number of countries where prostitution is legal, where it's completely illegal, and we see human trafficking as an issue in all of those countries, from Australia to Greece to Bulgaria to the United States. It is an issue. I think it comes down to a money-making. It's a money-making industry. It's an organized crime. It's not opportunistic. I think.
And by the way, we're not talking hundreds of thousands. We're not talking millions. We're probably talking billions here, right?
$150 billion grossed every year.
My word.
That is the profits of human trafficking.
That's global, by the way, not
global,
just in South Africa.
Yeah, that's treating a person like a commodity. You go down to the grocery store and you buy bread and milk every day because that's what you need. As soon as it's finished, you go down and buy more bread and milk because that's what you need. And that's exactly what human trafficking does to a person. It says, you're a commodity. I will use you until I cannot use you anymore, or until you are useless to me, and then I will go and get another one just like you. And unfortunately, it is an organized crime, the largest growing organized crime globally. And I think why people need to understand why it grosses so much money is you can sell a drug once, you can sell a gun once, but a human being, you can sell many, 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 many times and make a lot of money off one commodity, in inverted commas. And so that's why it's not necessarily an opportunistic crime, but we see rings operating within South Africa, globally, inter-country, so between South Africa and other countries, which is actually a strength of A21. When we're in a lot of different countries, we actually can assist each other. We have an operation in Thailand, so victims who come from Thailand, we're able to assist them home. Same with Bulgaria. So, yeah, that's a little bit about what we do.
Nosipho referenced, I suppose, the work that they do with the Hawks. Mm-hmm. How is your work with government in trying to fight, obviously, the amount and the prevalence of sex slavery, servitude, and trafficking?
So we sit on a number of task teams within government from before there was a law illegalizing human trafficking. Now we do have one, which criminalizes, obviously, human trafficking and makes the victim actually a victim and not a criminal, as Nosipho was talking about. But so that's what we do. We sit on task teams. But also a year ago, we launched a 24/7 hotline. We call it the National Human Trafficking Resource Line, 0800-222-777. Because what we realized is there are many victims and there are many services. Government wants to, their intentions are to assist. The funding is very little, but their intentions are to assist many NGOs, but victims are not finding their way to that. So we launched this line in order to exactly that, connect victims to services, help on raids when victims are identified. Where there are no government responses, we help to mobilize government and NGO responses. I will say our government has taken leaps and bounds, but I think with most new laws that come in, the funding is just not there.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we're probably a couple of years behind or lagging behind. So the legislation is now there.
Definitely.
It will be tested in its various formations and whatever the case may be. And once it's feasible, then we'll probably start seeing budgets being allocated to obviously do the actual work that needs to be done.
Definitely. And I think it comes down to wins in the courtroom. The more you're going to see prosecutions happening in the courtroom, I think the more budget will be allocated. And that comes down to proper identification, proper victim assistance, and actually getting a strong court case.
There will be somebody listening, Nosipho, and thinking, well, if we did not encourage not that SWET is encouraging prostitution, I'm not suggesting that at all, but if we did not create the enabling environment, for example, that we would see, we would see a reduction in reporting of sex slavery and so forth and so forth. There are people who criticize your organization for the amount of support work you provide men and women who find themselves in the industry.
So for the mere fact that we've had so much success in referring to A21 and referring to the Hawks shows you that where there is trust and a peer-led kind of system, then it actually makes it easier for people to report. So because of this relationship, it hasn't really reduced reporting, but instead it has allowed us to actually stay in connection with A21, with the Hawks, with the police, and say, this sex worker has been trafficked, can you please remove them? So I wouldn't say that saying we're wanting decriminalization means now we're going to enable another whole kind of worms where it's just going to be easier to traffic people. We must also understand that it's going to be easier for us when brothels do not have this much red tape to actually enter that space and find people and extract them from those situations.
All right. My guests are Nosipho Vidima, Human Rights and Lobbying Officer at SWET, as well as Katie Modrow, Country Manager at A21, two of the organizations that are doing their utmost to fight human and sex trafficking in South Africa. The South African National Human Trafficking Resource Line, as was shared a few moments ago, 0800-222-777. That's a 24-hour line. 0800-222-777. If you yourself know of somebody who is a victim of sex or human trafficking, call that number and provide the authorities with as much information as possible, and we can see whether we can extract them from them. All right, we're back live with our studio audience talking about a very difficult subject matter, that of human trafficking in South Africa and around the world. We've got time for one or two questions. Let's start with you, ma'am. If you can hold your microphone close to your mouth so that listeners can hear you as well.
Jill Spreef, Cape Town City Centre. Griselda, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I appreciate that. I have one question. How the hell did you manage to get out of it?
All right. Griselda, do you want to answer that question?
Well, you know, I found grace when I had to go through a health issue, meaning, you know, HIV, and that's where I tested God and questioning, and also individuals like your A21 and MECAT, NGOs that I met through my time of exiting. And I really questioned my health because my body was starting to collapse now. You know, stuff like your boils and everything was falling apart, and I really questioned, what's up, the dude above, like, who are you? You're not going to keep me alive to feel this pain. And also, you know, when I got the escape through a painful situation, losing my daughter, rehab took place, got an opportunity to work in a shelter or so, Home of Hope, where little babies were brought in back then by women that leave them. And that's where humanity kicked in, when I rocked every baby to sleep, because I had to stay at Home of Hope to take care of those kids, and because I was overage, so I couldn't stay there unless I cleaned them. And that moment of rocking every baby to sleep kicked in, and I guess that's when everything, but grace, yeah.
You should get her book. The title of it is Exit, published by Blackbird, and you can get it from Exclusive Books. And it really tells it's a harrowing story, but it's a story that needs to be read indeed.
The name is Teboho from Gardens. Africa, I'm a bit concerned with SWET, in that Nosipho will probably assist me in this. When the portfolio committee, then Portfolio Committee on Justice, was processing the Sexual Offences Bill. Mm. Between 2006 and 2008, SWET, on making their submission, were opposing the suggestion by the committee that sex work be legalized, which would mean that sex workers are registered as workers, and the implication is that they'll pay tax, because the reasoning of the committee was that if they are registered as workers, they'll enjoy the protection that comes with being a worker. Whereas as independents, as she calls them, they are vulnerable to the traffickers and whatever you know. So why did they oppose the suggestion by the Portfolio Committee of Justice then to legalize sex work and register sex workers as workers?
All right.
So our view is that, or what we've actually seen where sex work is legalized, is that it actually puts a lot of red tape. So women in the sex industry or people who sell sex are asked, for instance, to provide every 3 monthly maybe an HIV test, and this would obviously be public knowledge. And this creates another doorway for sex work to move further away into the background, move further into the dark areas of community, meaning that not a lot of people are actually going to be wanting to be tested every 3 months, or their status shown publicly in a form of a paper. So people will actually move into places where nobody can reach them or nobody can find them, because being found and you haven't got this paper that declares you to be HIV negative or HIV positive would instantly mean that you go to prison. So it doesn't create an environment that actually makes sex workers safe or makes us be able to access this vulnerable group. Instead, it pushes them away. So this is why we oppose legalization, whereas if you're putting decriminalization in place, what you're saying, you're removing all the criminality, meaning that people can come forth, people can actually be without stigma, be without discrimination, can actually walk into a clinic, can walk into a police station and report a crime. We want decriminalization so that people are put in labor laws. Brothel owners would have a certain kind of way in which to treat their workers that falls within the Constitution. So we are not totally saying we want no regulation. We just want one that is suitable to our constitutions, which actually allows equality.
All right. And what will happen is that you two ladies are going to have a cup of coffee.